Brandon Scott, John Lopez, Chris Santiago, they are in the loop and they start now.
So the Texans lost the game according to the box score, but did anybody really lose last night from that experience? Finally getting football back, getting to see some new things, getting to see the Texans in their new uniforms, new players, all of that. Lopez, I don't feel like there was a loss had last night. Other than if you want to say we didn't get to see all of the game because it was called early, I don't feel like they really lost.
I won. I mean, that over hit in the first drive of the third quarter.
There you go. That's what matters, baby. That's what matters.
Did you still get paid on that?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, even I did. Some did not. MGM did not. A few others did not. I've got the money in the account.
That's always the weirdest thing to me. Yeah. Like an over. Like, yeah, I know they don't. They didn't play.
They didn't finish
football.
The game. I still but hit, the, hit over. The over. Yes, I got paid.
You got to play the whole game out with somebody.
Yeah,
of
they said 55 minutes is the minimum. I looked it up, but then I got paid. 55 minutes out of 60 is an official game. Anywho,
rounds on Lopez.
Anywho, right,
these are the go. Topics that move me. Sorry,
yes, it
that.
Is.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
They
That's what we're here for.
Too. They moved me yesterday. Anyway, no, this was a win.
It was.
It was a win, and I really feel that way. I didn't even care. Like 17-7, I believe, and they were clicking on offense early. Then you start really getting the scrubs in. It was a thing of beauty offensively, and I can explain that.
Yeah.
I can explain that.
Well, so, and I want you to, because my overarching takeaway, and I said this to you before the show, my basic B takeaway from the game was – offense good, defense not so much. Like the offense is good no matter, for the most part, who they put out there relative to their depth on the team.
Yeah,
the defense absolutely needs its guys. It needs its dudes out there to look the way we expect the Texans defense to look. Offense good, defense bad, my basic B takeaway.
Let me tell you why I was excited last night and why fans should be excited as well. If you thought this offense was something last year, I think you should buckle up. Because it's going to get better. Let's look at what Bobby Slowik did. He took Davis freaking Mills. He took a special teams player in Ogunbowale. He took a dude coming off an Achilles in Cam Akers. He took a fifth string, at best, Xavier Hutchinson. He took a sixth string, we thought, J.J. Taylor. He took a pair of unproven tight ends, Stover and Katoriano, and was just clicking offensively.
Yeah.
By the way, in a very tamped down, watered down version of their offense.
It is kind of going back to what Sean and Seth were just talking about, and really what Seth was going on about, how Davis Mills didn't really look as good as maybe the box score would tell you, or even as you thought he looked in real time.
Yeah.
It had a lot to do with, and to your point, Lopez, it had a lot to do with just it being the type of scheme that any competent person, any competent players can run. Like, it's just a sort of a plug-and-play thing. We've seen them do
and
this.
And make them better.
Seen them do this in San Francisco and in other places, and they're doing it here in the preseason with Davis Mills 100%.
We talk about the sweeping headlines. You just mentioned it. I often say, what's the 72-point headline of this game? To me, it's Bobby Slowik. He just took a basic offense, and it was humming. Like, it was humming. With all those guys that really, by a lot of rights, shouldn't even be on an NFL football field, or at least have to prove themselves on an NFL football field come the regular season. And Bobby Slowik, everybody buckle up, because he's feeling good and he's got his feet on the ground. He's got that first year under his belt. Bobby Slowik made me very excited about what this offense can be. Let's imagine, like, okay, instead of Davis freaking Mills, who we talked about, you know, was kind of like the epitome of Davis Mills, really, really good, and then, oh my gosh, and all these running backs and these receivers. Now let's imagine the same thing with a more advanced game plan, an actual game plan, with C.J. Stroud and Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon and maybe, hell, Cam Akers in the mix at some point, and Damian Pierce. This made me feel so good about the offense, I can't even tell you.
Yeah, so I said that nobody really took an L. If someone did, or if a group did take an L, for me, it's the perception of the defense. And I said a moment ago, offense good, defense not so much. We were talking about this before the show. The offense looks like, you know, plug and play the way it's supposed to. The defense 100% needs its guys. There was nobody outside of Kalen Bullock. And I know that Seth was talking about Harris, one of the Marcus Harris, one of the rookies, defensive lineman. He said got penetration and he noticed him. I did not have the close enough eye to notice anybody outside of Kalen Bullock. That would be if there was an L.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, the other side of this, Bobby Slowick and how good the offense looked, I'm sure D'Amico Ryans at some point had to be seething that he wasn't able to have the same plug-and-play success mm-hmm. with the other guys, the extra guys from the defense, the way the offense was able to
do. Well, it speaks to me to depth and what you can do with that depth, because D'Amico Ryans, like Bobby Slowick, as I've been talking about, is no chump when it comes to scheming and getting guys prepared technique-wise and otherwise to play any game, no matter who's on the field. So it wasn't so much like what they were doing and how they were playing that Bears offense. I think it's the depth on the defensive side of the ball. Stay healthy, boys, because it was clear last night, and we got three more preseason games, but it was clear last night anyway that the depth is going to be something to watch.
We will get to this more with the OG's passing thoughts at 10:20, but I do feel like we got to mention this off top.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans' offensive line, if there is a thing that I feel better about, and again, OG's passing thoughts coming up at 10:20, you don't want to miss it. But if there is an aspect of this team that I absolutely feel better about, one thing I would say, backup quarterback, I didn't feel terrible about last night, just on backup quarterback standards. But if there is a thing, a more significant thing that I feel good about from the Texans after last night's game, it is absolutely the offensive line. From set go, from like the first drive all the way until, you know, once we get into mop-up duty. But the significant snaps that we saw from last night, I absolutely feel a lot more comfortable with the Texans offensive line.
Yeah, and as much with the running game, because those were backup running backs. Now, look, the offensive line, they had two starters start the game. We talked a lot about Kenyon Green. Is he not? He did. We talked about Juice Scruggs. Is he not? He did start the game. And then Blake Fisher, who has been with the starting unit throughout camp and thus far, played as well. The running game, the holes that were there were legit. The cuts that they made, and that speaks to Slowick as well, you know, how he's translating this run game scheme to the backs that are here. No, I totally am with you. I felt much better about the depth and the performance of the offensive line. You were mentioning Reed. Where did my man come from?
Reed. And we're doing this thing. This is before I see, like, any of the tweets from the reporters, some of our friends that are out there, right? We know a lot of people that were obviously at the game. But I'm watching, you know, before I'm really following on Twitter, I'm really watching and trying to figure out. Before I saw it explained to me, I was like, who is Reed?
Yeah.
I thought I knew every name on this team, every face, especially the guys that were going to play in the first quarter. I figured I would at least know.
Yeah.
And they put somebody out there that I didn't quite recognize. And lo and behold, it was fine.
Yeah, Chris Reed. And our guy, Brocker, played a lot as well.
At tackle, too. And that's interesting because that has shown itself up in camp and has been confusing to me because I thought he was a guard, but apparently he's one of those with the positional flexibility to go from guard to tackle.
Well, he went for Titus Howard that day, remember?
Yeah,
When Titus Howard was out, he played tackle. So, yeah, look, this the story today is, oh, you can't get anything out of a preseason game, especially the Hall of Fame game. The hell you can't. Like if you saw that game and you didn't think that Bobby Slowick already is dialed in, even when it's just, you know, plain vanilla offense, I don't know what to tell you. If you saw that performance last night and you saw at best the fifth best wide receiver on this team, at best, maybe sixth, in Xavier Hutchinson, what did he end up with? Five catches, something like that?
Yeah, he was the most targeted receiver for sure.
Yeah, and all that. Now, there is something to mention that's worth mentioning on the receivers as well. Where's my man John Metchie?
Oh, we'll talk about that. we are going to get there. I didn't want to, you know, I was trying to keep the vibes up a little bit, but we are going to have to address what we might call the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. I think John Metchie is the elephant in the room from the game.
Yeah.
And we will absolutely get to that. But we'll also talk about at 11 o'clock the things that I was wrong about or feel like I was wrong about after watching this game.
Mm-hmm.
But I love your Bobby Slowick takeaway, because that's one of the things that I feel like I was right about.
Yeah.
I said this earlier in the week that this game is going to be about a whole lot about coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to feel good about the coaching coming out of this game. Bobby Slowick, for all the reasons that you've already mentioned. And then D'Amico Ryans, although his the Jimmys and Joes that went out there were not necessarily up to snuff. I liked what I saw from D'Amico Ryans, the challenge. Mm-hmm. There's something about winning a challenge that makes you feel good about your head coach, and that was a really good challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. So like the coaching I thought was really good. And to me, that's the thing that you were really trying to watch for, because it's hard to glean certain things when it's just backups out there. But what you can get a sense for is what the coaches are trying to accomplish. You mentioned the offense.
Yeah.
We didn't even really get, you know, that much of a look at what they're going to be doing this year, because obviously it's the Hall of Fame game. They didn't want to show too much. Davis Mills talked about that after the game.
Not much, especially because we play these guys again, I think week two. We didn't want to show too much. Obviously, we're kind of running the foundation of our offense, the scheme that we install in those first couple installs. So I think we executed that at a high level for the most part, and I think there's still some stuff we have in the bag when we see these guys again pretty soon.
So it's pretty standard, Lopez, for teams not to show a lot in the preseason, especially the first preseason game, especially if you've got four preseason games, an extra preseason game.
And you're facing this team real soon.
So that makes sense. It's obvious.
Yeah.
The reason why that is worth noting, though, or why I find it cool, is because of how good it looked.
Like you said, that's my whole point. That's it.
If it looks this good on a base level, on an elementary level, and they haven't really, we know they haven't shown us much, then it makes you feel a lot better about, okay, when they do open things up, and when it's C.J. Stroud back there and not Davis Mills, when it's Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins and Tank Dell on any given day are your top targets or your top wide receivers, and not Xavier Hutchinson, who, by the way, we'll talk about, made an impression and seems like a guy who should probably make this team, but probably shouldn't be the guy that you target first in a game.
What does Clint Sterner always say? Do the simple things savagely well.
Yeah,
that was the Texans' offense. That's why. I mean, I'm not giddy, but that's why I'm so encouraged by what I saw. And as a texter pointed out on the YouTube stream, I thought you guys were saying that the defense has looked better 60% of the time.
Yeah.
They have.
That was the surprise.
They have.
To texter, YouTuber, that is exactly what we're getting at.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're telling you. And this is not a confession. It's just a reality of what played out. At training camp and to a man, this is not just an in-the-loop thing. Yeah. Ask anybody that's been out there with us.
Yeah.
The defense has won training camp. The defense has been the star unit at training camp. It was the opposite in this particular game. The caveat, of course, is the depth. The guys that have made the defense the story of training camp, the story so far of the preseason, were not playing last night.
Yeah.
And clearly they absolutely need those guys to make that impact that we've been telling y'all about at training camp.
Yeah, and back to the simple thing, savagely well. That translates into what we've been hearing from the players on the offense. What we've been hearing, and they joined us every day, players from this team, and especially the offense. Like, you want it to come naturally. You don't want to have to think about things. You know, whatever Bobby Slowick calls, whatever Gerard Johnson tells you, you know, on the sideline, you want it to just click right away. And that's why this offense, even with the backups and sometimes third-teamers playing so well, is so encouraging, because it just looks like it's coming naturally to them. They're not having to think as much. They're doing the simple things savagely well. That is the best thing to come out of this whole game.
So I might have been a little bit selfish to start the show. Might have lied a little bit by saying nobody lost. And I was even thinking about him when I said this. I feel like overall the greater good was served last night. Our football appetite was fed. And so I feel like there was just no loss taken. But somebody did take an L last night.
Somebody took an L?
Somebody did take an L. Can Tegan Quatoriano ever get right?
Yeah.
Like, is that dude ever... And I'm only mentioning this because the tight end position group for us that are like in the trenches of this thing is a kind of an interesting topic. Like, we like Dalton Schultz, but the depth of it is real interesting, because you've got a guy that's new to the position. You got a guy that's undersized and Brevin Jordan. You've got Tegan Quatoriano, who can never stay healthy. Tegan Quatoriano goes out there and I thought showed what he is as a player. Like, even Joe Buck kind of mentioned it, known as a blocking tight end, but yeah. Well, watch him a little bit more. He does both. Catches the ball well, blocks, big as hell like you want your tight end to be.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, man, has the worst injury luck that I can find, man. Tegan Quatoriano had he caught two passes for 21 yards and had that touchdown.
Yeah.
And not too long after that, I don't think we saw this on the broadcast because I only saw it on Twitter. He's carted off the field, man.
Yeah.
Carted off the field. That is the one L taken, and I think, you know, the depth of the tight end position is, you know, something to watch, but at least felt good about about them until Tegan Quatoriano had that unlucky streak there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and the tight end position I thought showed itself really well. I thought Cade Stover was exactly what we thought he was. A little extra yardage after his catches. Big dude.
Really excited about him, Lopez.
Really exciting to watch. I thought Quatoriano, you know, we mentioned the touchdown, et cetera. But, you know, he's got to get healthy. I thought they showed pretty well. This was the story of the game was the offense. And that's not a bad thing. The defense is going to be there. The depth maybe not, but the defense is going to be there.
Let me ask you this. Both of y'all, Santiago and Lopez, I'm curious because this did surprise me. Maybe I didn't see the report before the game. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised. Were y'all surprised Jalen Petrie didn't play in this game?
Huh. Was I?
Like when I saw him on the sideline, I don't think I noticed it or thought about it much until I saw him on the sideline in his sweats or whatever he was wearing.
Mm-hmm.
But, and y'all know I'm a big fan, of course, but thought that he needed to play in this game and thought that he would play in this game. Like if Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs are playing in this game.
Exactly. That's why I was surprised.
I figured that that Jalen Petrie would be playing. But you could also say, well, if Dameon Pierce is not playing in this game, then Jalen Petrie. It was kind of odd, the Venn diagram of guys who played and didn't. I did.
Yeah.
Because of the Joe Mixon thing. Like they're similarly situated, Pierce and Petrie, because of, you know, the down year in their second year and trying to come back and everything. But it was just an odd Venn diagram for me of who played, who didn't play. And more specifically, Jalen Petrie not being out there at whatever position he's going to play. I think I texted you about this, Lopez. Yeah. I'm like, Jalen Petrie ain't out there.
Yeah.
He's starting somewhere.
Yeah.
Safety, nickel, whatever it is.
But it didn't make sense to me because.
Not at all.
Kenyon Green had something to prove. So even though he's a starter, air quotes, he played. Juice Scruggs really doesn't have a whole lot to prove, but he's got a little to prove. And he had been injured, so they wanted to get him some reps, even though he's a starter. He played. Jalen Petrie has something to prove. Not only does he have something to prove, he's in a new position altogether. And here's the other thing. There's only three nickels on this roster. I got the Dameon Pierce because there's, I think, seven, eight running backs on the roster. Let's see. Hold on a second.
Well, and you want to see no matter
what. And you want to see him.
Well, no matter what the number is, you want to see more from all the rest of those guys.
But
from Cam Akers down to the rookies.
The guys that are five, six, and seven. It made sense for Dameon Pierce to sit down because you can see those guys in a real game and maybe the only time you really get a shot at them. But Jalen Petrie, that was bizarre.
Brandon Scott here with John Lopez and Chris Santiago rolling along on In the Loop. Coming up next, we got more passing thoughts from last night's Hall of Fame game from the OG. Don't miss it right here on Sports Radio 610.
Because it's Friday, you ain't got no job, and you ain't got shit to do.
Houston, let's get in the loop.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
You're in the loop on Houston Sports Leader.
You know what I'm bringing today. You know what I'm bringing today. Let's go.
Go to work.
Let's go.
Hey, Sam.
Sports Radio 610.
The OG's passing thoughts from last night's Hall of Fame game. We know the Texans technically lost the game, but we all win from the experience. Before we get started with these passing thoughts, because one of them is an offshoot of one of my passing thoughts, all that hype around the new kickoff, I wasn't feeling it. It was just kind of meh, non-eventful. It didn't really do anything for me. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I was anticipating it just like everybody else last night. And then once it happened, I was like, oh, yeah, that's different. But
yeah.
I am not moved by it at all.
Well, that's my first one. That's my first passing thought. Let's not bury the lead here. I mean, they were talking about it last night, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
It was historic in a lot of ways.
It was historic. The entire league was watching. Here's my thought on that, though. It was. In fact, I put that. I wrote that down when I'm keeping my notes here. I wrote. It was kind of meh. The opening kickoff and the kickoffs in general. But to me, I wouldn't put too much into that. I would say it's still going to be a very exciting play. It's still going to be something that that is going to actually determine games, and you're going to want to watch, etc. And the reason is this. I use this analogy popped into my mind. It's like learning how to swim. Like when you first jump into a pool, you're a little unsure. You're stiff. You're a little slower. You're sort of like eyes wide open. Okay, what's going to happen here? That's what last night was to me.
Yeah, I just didn't really get much out of it. I saw a lot of more football nerdy people saying that they liked it, and it had mixed reviews.
It's hard to say you like it after that.
Yeah, what got me. Yeah. I saw some pretty smart football people saying, I like it. It looks good. And I'm like, what part of it? I mean, they even asked Devin Hester. They did the sideline interview with Devin Hester, the greatest returner of all time, being inducted along with Andre Johnson this weekend into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's like, yeah, I want to get out there and try it myself.
Yeah.
But it looks a little choppy right now to start.
It was learning how to swim.
Yeah.
Remember the first time you jumped into a pool when you were a kid or whatever?
It wasn't great.
You're just like, what do I do? You're just stiffer and slower and unsure. That's what I felt it was. It's going to be good.
Well, and that is what the preseason is for, especially the Hall of Fame game, the extra preseason game, work out the kinks, figure out some things. I'm pretty sure there will be some things about it that look different throughout the course of the year. The league will make adjustments. Teams around the league will make adjustments, like you said.
And it was plain vanilla.
Oh, yeah. And they were definitely watching. Everybody was watching and taking notes, and they're going to make their amendments. I feel good about the fact that Frank Ross is the one that's running things for the Texans.
Boy, he was working that iPad or whatever that thing is. Not iPad, whatever they use.
Some kind of tablet.
Yeah.
Some tablet of some sort. It's probably Microsoft.
Microsoft, for sure. Yeah.
Definitely. Now, Seth mentioned this morning. From watching it, I know that they said that it's supposed to, like, they want to mitigate injury or, you know, lessen injury risk. I ain't see that either. You know what I mean? Like, them dudes was close to each other. Yeah. I mean, it still looked like football to me.
Not as much velocity, I guess, in their running.
I suppose.
All right, another passing thought. These running backs eased my mind.
Did they?
They did. These running backs eased my mind. I didn't know what to expect from Cam Akers. Like, zero. I had no expectation whatsoever. Dari looked pretty damn good.
Dari's fine.
He's reliable. I'll give you my other passing thought, because I literally wrote this down and I texted it to you. Who the hell is J.J. Taylor?
I was shocked that you said that, Lopez.
Sure.
Nah, because Lopez.
Chris, did you know anything about J.J. Taylor?
I've heard of him before. I've heard of him.
But
not like, you know what I mean?
Like.
He is not. We have not done a J.J. Taylor segment.
No, we have
not. Let's just be honest about that. I'll be fair to you here, Lopez.
Yeah.
We have not done a lot of. We could probably even pull this. The J.J. Taylor references on In the Loop over the last 3 weeks.
Over under 1.5.
Ooh, push.
Push.
I feel like we definitely mentioned him once, though.
Because
I noticed him, and then really this is the only time.
Mm-hmm.
One of those first practices we went to before pads, before anything. Because I remember the running backs, this is just how we were situated out there.
Yeah.
They were closest to us doing their positional drills. And so I'm like, you know, taking notes of who's who.
I got
to
see your notes on J.J. Taylor.
No. Like, I'm talking about like attendance notes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, checking the roster, who's number this, who's number that. Like when I didn't recognize a guy, who's that? Oh, it was J.J. Taylor.
J.J. Taylor.
So, yeah.
But the running backs eased my mind. Another passing thought here. Yeah, you can call me crazy if you want. I really feel like we saw 3/5 of the starting offensive line maybe by the end of this year.
Come on now. We know who two of them are, but the third one, who job you got him taking?
Blake Fisher?
Who job you got him taking, Lopez?
I'm just saying injuries happen, little dings. And
that's why
and
he was out there for one reason
happen.
Last night.
But Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, hat tip. Here's another one, passing thought, not necessarily with the game itself. Those white on deep steel blue uniforms, they look pretty sharp.
Listen,
they look pretty sharp.
I'll mention later on in the show the things that I was wrong about. I don't think I even included this, but this was maybe the thing I was most wrong about.
Yeah,
the white uniforms. So when the uniforms came out, I was varying degrees of I like it or love it, right?
Yeah.
And the whites were my...
They were down on the bottom.
Hold on. Amend that. Pause. The white uniforms. The white uniforms.
Tell me about the whites.
The white jerseys were the ones that I like least. I ain't want y'all clipping that. The internet can be a very ugly place. The white uniforms were the ones that I liked the least.
Yeah.
I loved them last night.
Yeah, so you like the whites the least.
I loved the whites last night. Me and the whites were good.
Okay.
I ain't got no issue with the whites. Don't come for me.
No, those white jerseys were icy, man.
They were nice.
I was wrong about them.
And I got to admit, part of my passing thought was, those were the ones I kind of liked the least. To your point.
Yeah, no, they were.
Just imagine these other ones are going to be pretty sharp on the field.
Also, since you mentioned the blue, it was appropriate that Andre Johnson was being celebrated and he's going into the Hall of Fame, because the deep steel blue made me think about the old days of the Texans when Andre Johnson was first putting them on the map, because as we know, the color got lighter over the years.
Yeah.
Those colors reminded me of the Andre Johnson, Seth Payne days of the Texans.
Yeah. This guy may not even make the team. In fact, I would guess he won't. But your eye immediately goes to number 90 on the field, Ali Gay. That dude's got to be 6'7". And he just looks the part. And number 90, something about that. Like, he looks like a dude out there. I don't know if he's going to make it. He made a couple tackles.
Yeah. One of their get-off-the-bus guys, I would say. I don't know how he fits into the positional depth and hierarchy or whatever, the pecking order, if you will.
Yeah.
But definitely one of their get-off-the-bus type of guys.
No doubt. Another passing thought right here. Shout out to Kalen Bullock. He showed a lot. Like he made a couple. He was out of position on, I think, one play for sure. Maybe another one.
I mean, definitely even that touchdown play.
He got beat. Yeah, he got beat.
The first touchdown. I mean,
but he made some plays, and all the things that were making him draftable were on display. He looked the part.
He was the rookie I was most excited about going in. Now that's changed a little bit now that we know Kamari Lassiter is for sure going to be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty clear he's the one to be most excited about.
Yeah.
But on draft night, I said, man, this Kalen Bullock dude.
Yeah.
He's got flaws in his game. He's got some areas in which he needs to develop, no doubt about it. But the upside is very clear, very obvious. He is a playmaker, and what does he go out there and do? Makes the only real defensive play that I've got to talk to y'all about today.
Yeah.
And that was forcing that fumble, despite the fact that they didn't get it.
Yeah.
Him forcing that fumble, it also kind of debunked some of the ideas of him not being physical enough.
Mm-hmm.
He's got areas to work on in his game, but I am intrigued.
Another passing thought here. We may not know why Jalen Petrie did not play, but we know why Desmond King did. He got buttered toast. I mean, he got on that touchdown. He had the under, left him wide open. He's a good player. Dude was a Pro Bowler not too long ago, but he was on the field at a bad moment.
Yeah, the Desmond King, there definitely needs to be more discussed, I think, about what happened there.
Nickel,
like,
man, in general.
How it is that he, you know, he's been around on the team for a while and he's played well at various times, but just constantly finds himself like on the bubble, it seems like.
Yeah. One more for you here, and we were talking with Chris about this before the game. Tommy Townsend, as I said last week during training camp, as we were watching him boot some punts, nothing to worry about, folks. That dude can boot it. He can boot it. He's going to be real good for this squad.
Yeah, like I loved Cam Johnston. Don't feel like I'm going to miss him because of this guy.
Yeah.
Like just flat out. Don't feel like I'm going to miss him or bat an eye. Those are the OG's passing thoughts coming from last night's game, the Hall of Fame game with the Texans and the Bears. Coming up next, we get Kikuchi tonight.
Yeah, we do.
Are we excited? That's next on In the Loop.
We're making the stories from outside the loop matter to you. This is Localize It.
Don't you know I'm local?
You're in the loop on Houston's sports leader. Localize It. Sports Radio 610.
So we know the Astros made a big trade ahead of the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
They acquired left-handed starter, Yusei Kikuchi from the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for a trio of prospects, two of which have played for them at the major league level, and the other one has a last name that is famous in this town. They gave up Will Wagner, Billy Sun, obviously Joey Loperfido, and Jake Bloss, all for Yusei Kikuchi, a back of the rotation starter who has
100%.
Who Adam Spillane says 100% makes them a better team, has a 4+ ERA, but the peripheral numbers apparently tell you a different story. I would object to that, but let me just ask you this, Lopez, before I get into some of these peripheral numbers that people talk about. Mm-hmm. Are you excited for some Kikuchi tonight?
Always. And yes.
Always. It's our first time.
Oh,
though.
Well, okay.
What do you mean always? We've never done this before.
Sign me up.
Talking about.
No, seriously, I am. Because, like, this is as much as we can talk about the peripherals are good. No, they're bad. And you were talking about this during the break, and we'll get to them in just a second.
Astros have the Rays tonight, by the way.
Yeah.
Should mention that.
As much as that's the case, and we're talking about, was it a good trade? They got fleeced, you know, et cetera. It's crucial. Like, it's crucial to this team to get a guy that can eat up, to get a guy that they say they got. Like, the numbers might say otherwise. The recent performances, the recent outings might say otherwise. But they need the guy that they say they got. Did they get that guy? We're going to start seeing tonight. And I think it's a big, big game for him on a personal level and, of course, for the Astros as well. And the other part of this is, like, I talk about, you're going to mention some of the peripherals that maybe contradict what 100% means. Yeah, you know,
I just feel like some of it is selective.
Yes.
Like there are good peripherals and there are bad ones, and we're going to get into them.
But there's also, the guy starts, does he eat up innings? Does he get wins? Even when he doesn't get a no decision, does he keep the opponent in such a place that the team can still get a win?
Does it give the bullpen a manageable game?
The answer in his last 9 starts, I'm going back to the beginning of June, is no, no, and no. He doesn't go more than 5 innings, but once in the last 9 starts. His team has lost 6 of those last 9 starts, and he has not performed well. He's 4-9 for the season. Now, that's the surface stuff that really kind of bothers me and makes me wonder if he's really going to be the guy. Now, Adam says, and a lot of people say, I'm just using him as an example, but he throws 97. Yeah, but he's a swing and miss guy. Yeah, but, you know, on this team with a little tweaks, and they talked about it. You know, we feel like we can, you know, we can maybe adjust his approach a little bit.
I hope so.
And he'll excel. I hope so, too. But that's one way to look at those peripheral numbers. There's another way.
Yeah, there's absolutely another way. And you and I disagreed a little bit on how to act on the desperation. I feel like I started to come on your side, though, after a while. Like, I understood and was sympathetic to how desperate they were to add to the back end of this rotation and felt like they did what they felt like they had to do. And I was a little sensitive toward it. But we also asked the question, like, would you have just rather not done anything at all as opposed to getting got or feeling like you got?
Yeah.
And that's how I felt about this. Would you say Kikuchi? The best way to explain it for me is he is boom or bust, feast or famine. Everything that they say about him is true. Yes, he gets a lot of whiffs, swings and misses. His fastball velocity is pretty good. And yeah, he'll strike guys out. He does this. Probably why he's here in this position to begin with.
Yeah.
But when he's not doing that, you know what he's doing? Giving up hard contact. Like the same peripherals that they talk about in what peripherals are, basically, baseball fans, if you want to go check it out, you can check out their numbers on Baseball Savant or StatCast. It'll tell you if he's good at this or bad at that, not just ERA or whip or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Strikes guys out, gets guys to swing and miss. You know what guys also do against him at a very, very high rate? Hit the ball hard.
Yeah.
His hard hit percentage and his barrel rate, his barrel percentage, are just as not redeeming as the ones that you want to use to support him. Now, he does have some bad luck with balls in play, but he also gives up hard contact.
Yeah.
So imagine what that's going to feel like with Yusei Kikuchi at Minute Maid Park, a dude that, yes, does get swings and misses, yes, does get strikeouts, but also gives up hard contact in what a lot of people from opposing fan bases call a baby ballpark. Like,
yes,
we love Minute Maid Park, but it's kind of small in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're giving up hard contact, that's not a good feeling, man. It's just not a good feeling. So I don't like how we've selectively, and when I say we, I'm talking about the collective we, not you, me, or Chris Santiago, but the collective we have said, well, he at least strikes guys out, but what about the part that has what I feel like led to the numbers that we don't like, the large ERA, or the reason why he gets pulled early in games is because he gives up hard contact, and that's the part that I don't like. Also, I'd mention this, and I don't feel like this gets talked about at all.
Mm-hmm.
He got demoted last year.
Yeah.
You gave the numbers of what it's been like over, what did you say, over the last nine
starts? Since June 10th.
Okay.
Going on 2 months.
So you gave the numbers of going on 2 months. What about if we give the context over the past actual year, like calendar year?
Mm-hmm.
Around this time last year, the Toronto Blue Jays were demoting Yusei Kikuchi out of their rotation into their bullpen. This year, he's back in the rotation, but not that good. And then then the Blue Jays aren't that good, and then they're trading him away.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that tells you all you need to know for me. Like, yeah, maybe the Astros have their own version of pixie dust that they can sprinkle on.
And they do. No, they proved they do.
Oh, we've seen it. Yeah. We've seen it.
That's why I'm so intrigued.
I need to see it play out before I can actually feel good about this move, given what they gave up.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm so crazy about those prospects. It's just the amount of them and what the return is.
Yeah.
It's like, you mean all of that for a dude that might just give up bombs at Minute Maid Park? I'm not feeling it.
Well, you know, you mentioned the advanced metrics and such. Yeah, he can throw 97, but you don't want it going out when he misses at 108. Because in those last nine starts that I've talked about since June 10th, nine starts, he's given up 10 home runs. So, yeah, it's going to be very intriguing to watch, and I'm going to be here for it.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the Astros against the Rays tonight, Minute Maid Park, Yusei Kikuchi making his Astros debut. Y'all been watching the Olympics, man. And Simone Biles, I got to say, she's got a feel for the crowd, a feel for a flair for the dramatic. Is that the right?
Perfect.
She definitely has a sense for it. Got an aura about her. Obviously, the most, at this point now, the most accomplished gymnast of all time. Check her out last night talking about her goat necklace and how much she loves agitating the haters with it.
Don't only have the gold medal around your neck, but there's also a goat. Yeah. Tell me about it.
It's a little ode. I mean, a lot of people love it. They always call me the goat, so I thought it would be really special if I got one made. And the haters hate it, so I love that even more. And it's just a special part of me that I have here, as well as in the village, I have like a stuffed goat, just to get a reminder, like, you can go out there, you can do it. You've done it before, so let's go.
You know what I love about her? She's absolutely the goat. And I'm going to get into something that might tweak a few feathers when we get to confessions.
She's undeniable.
She is undeniable. But what I really like about her, she owns that she's a little polarizing, a lot polarizing in some circles. People like, remember Oop, I got blocked because that former gymnast was talking about her and
just
stuff.
A couple days ago.
And unafraid to wear a goat necklace. Like if LeBron did that.
Oh, man.
If LeBron did that.
Listen, well, I mean, LeBron has chosen one or something like that tattooed on his body.
But if he wore a goat necklace, he would be destroyed.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He would be destroyed. I like that she owns it. Like, she knows her place, is unafraid to not necessarily brag, but embrace it, you know?
Does it make sense if I say that I don't really like her? And I like her at the same time.
No, that's what she is. And she's embracing it. She gets it.
Like, she's got a vibe and an aura about her that makes me feel like, you know, I don't, not that she wants to hang out with me, okay? But I think I would pass. Like, hey, do you want to have lunch with Simone Biles and Jonathan Owens? I'd be like, does Simone have to come? I kick it with J.O. I remember J.O. when he was here, but I don't really have to be around Simone Biles. Yeah. But to your point, she don't seem like she really give a
she don't care
a bleep.
No,
right?
And I like that.
Like she is absolutely here for the smoke, it seems. She is absolutely here to, like, just brush off the haters, and even not just brush them off, but to agitate them. To say, hey, guess what? You may not like me. Mm-hmm. You may think one way about me, but guess what? I'm the GOAT.
I'm the GOAT.
I'm undeniable. Watch me work. Watch me do my thing.
You
what,
and I
what
were.
What can you say?
You and I were talking about this with Santiago before the show, because I'm with you. I get that she's polarizing, which is weird because she's the best there's ever been. But like, if you're just watching gymnastics and you don't know about difficulty and you don't know how high she goes, which is incredible.
She's unreal, man.
Suni Lee is more fun to watch. Like, to just watch.
Well, you know, I mean, you know how I feel.
Well,
about
I know
that.
You, especially, I
mean,
you know.
I mean, y'all know how I feel about that.
We all know how you feel
Come
about Suni
now.
Lee.
Come on now.
I was thinking about you last night. Yeah,
yeah, man.
Especially when she was. No. Anyway.
Absolutely.
But like, just as a gymnast, she's not. She's a gold medal winner, for God's sake. She was the defending all around gold medal winner. She's awesome. But like, if you're just like watching gymnastics from a novice's perspective, like, and didn't know all the details, I think Suni Lee's more fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, she does.
Yeah.
She does more, I guess, fun
the
things.
The dancing, the lines, the facial expressions, you know.
But there is, whereas
Simone Biles is like, holy crap.
Yeah, yeah. So it depends on what do you value, though, because
yeah.
there's something about that holy crap element.
Yeah.
Like, she's just unlike anything else. Similar to the way Usain Bolt was,
yeah.
and track is starting today. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
But like, similar to the way Usain Bolt was, like, you could appreciate all the other track athletes out there, but this was the one.
You were like holy crap.
You got to lock in. Michael Phelps, the same way, back
yeah.
when he was doing his thing. Like, it's like, man, I like some of these other stories in swimming. I like some of these other stories in track and field. I might even like watching some of them more. But this is the one that I got to lock in. It's undeniable.
Yeah.
Maybe even for me, there's that element of, you know what, I don't really like her, but I like that I don't like her. Like,
but you
this,
also like her.
Yeah, it adds to the intrigue of like, and I'm also not like hating.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just, it
Be
ain't.
Careful, man.
Not my cup of tea.
And they're about to start calling you a hater.
Okay.
I don't give a damn.
Tune in at 12:20. Feathers ruffled.
Yeah. Call me a hater and I will respond with, and, you know, like, you ain't gonna whoop me, though. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Come on now. Coming up next on In the Loop, the things that I was wrong about after the Texans' first preseason game. Don't miss that. It's next, Sports Radio 610.
We're making the stories from outside the loop matter to you. This is Localize It.
Don't you know I'm local?
You're in the loop on Houston's sports leader. Sports Radio 610.
So we know the Astros made a big trade ahead of the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
They acquired left-handed starter, Yusei Kikuchi from the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for a trio of prospects, two of which have played for them at the major league level, and the other one has a last name that is famous in this town. They gave up Will Wagner,
yeah.
Billy Sun, obviously Joey Loperfido, and Jake Bloss, all for Yusei mm-hmm. Kikuchi, a back of the rotation starter who has
100%.
Who Adam Spillane says 100% makes them a better team, has a 4+ ERA, but the peripheral numbers apparently tell you a different story. I would object to that, but let me just ask you this, Lopez, before I get into some of these peripheral numbers that people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited for some Kikuchi tonight?
Always. and yes.
Always. It's our first time.
Oh,
though.
Well, okay.
What do you mean always? We've never done this before.
Sign me up.
Talking about.
No, seriously, I am. Because, like, this is, as much as we can talk about the peripherals are good, no, they're bad. And you were talking about this during the break, and we'll get to them in just a second.
Astros have the Rays tonight, by the way.
Yeah.
I should mention that.
As much as that's the case, and we're talking about, was it a good trade? They got fleeced, you know, et cetera. It's crucial. Like, it's crucial to this team to get a guy that can eat up, to get a guy that they say they got. Like, the numbers might say otherwise. The recent performances, the recent outings might say otherwise. But they need the guy that they say they got. Did they get that guy? We're going to start seeing tonight. And I think it's a big, big game for him on a personal level and, of course, for the Astros as well. And the other part of this is, like, I talk about, you're going to mention some of the peripherals that maybe contradict what 100% means. Yeah, you know,
I just feel like some of it is selective.
Yes,
like there are good peripherals and there are bad ones, and we're gonna get into them.
But there's also the guy starts. Does he eat up innings? Does he get wins? Even when he doesn't get a no decision, does he keep the opponent in such a place that the team can still get a win?
Does it give the bullpen a manageable game?
The answer in his last 9 starts, going back to the beginning of June, is no, no, and no. He doesn't go more than 5 innings, but once in the last 9 starts. His team has lost 6 of those last 9 starts, and he has not performed well. He's 4-9 for the season. Now that's the surface stuff that really kind of bothers me and makes me wonder if he's really going to be the guy. Now Adam says, and a lot of people say, I'm just using him as an example. Well, but he throws 97. Yeah, but he's a swing and miss guy. Yeah, but you know, on this team with a little tweaks, and they talked about it. You know, we feel like we can, you know, we can maybe adjust his approach a little bit.
I hope so.
And he'll excel. I hope so too. But that's one way to look at those peripheral numbers. There's another way.
Yeah, there's absolutely another way. And you and I disagreed a little bit on how to act on the desperation. I feel like I started to come on your side, though, after a while. Like, I understood and was sympathetic to how desperate they were to add to the back end of this rotation and felt like they did what they felt like they had to do. And I was a little sensitive toward it. But we also asked the question, like, would you have just rather not done anything at all as opposed to getting got? Or feeling like you got.
No.
And that's how I felt about this. Would you say Kikuchi, the best way to explain it for me is he is boom or bust, feast or famine. Everything that they say about him is true. Yes, he gets a lot of whiffs, swings and misses. His fastball velocity is pretty good. And yeah, he'll strike guys out. He does this. Probably why he's here in this position to begin with.
Yeah.
But when he's not doing that... When he's not doing that, you know what he's doing? Giving up hard contact. Like the same peripherals that they talk about. And what peripherals are, basically, baseball fans, if you want to go check it out, you can check out their numbers on Baseball Savant or StatCast. It'll tell you if he's good at this or bad at that. Not just ERA or whip or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Strikes guys out. Gets guys to swing and miss. You know what guys also do against him at a very, very high rate? Hit the ball hard.
Yeah.
His hard hit percentage and his barrel rate, his barrel percentage, are just as not redeeming as the ones that you want to use to support him. Now, he does have some bad luck with balls in play.
Yeah.
But he also gives up hard contact.
Yeah.
So imagine what that's going to feel like with Yusei Kikuchi at Minute Maid Park, a dude that, yes, does get swings and misses, yes, does get strikeouts, but also gives up hard contact in what a lot of people from opposing fan bases call a baby ballpark. Like,
yes.
We love Minute Maid Park, but it's kind of small in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're giving up hard contact, that's not a good feeling, man. It's just not a good feeling. So I don't like how we've selectively, and when I say we, I'm talking about the collective we, not you, me, or Chris Santiago, but the collective we have said, well, he at least strikes guys out, but what about the part that has what I feel like led to the numbers that we don't like, the large ERA, or the reason why he gets pulled early in games is because he gives up hard contact, and that's the part that I don't like. Also, I'd mention this. And I don't feel like this gets talked about at all.
Mm-hmm.
He got demoted last year.
Yeah.
You gave the numbers of what it's been like over, what did you say, over the last 9
starts? Since June 10th.
Okay.
Going on 2 months.
So you gave the numbers of going on 2 months. What about if we give the context over the past actual year, like calendar year?
Mm-hmm.
Around this time last year, the Toronto Blue Jays were demoting Yusei Kikuchi out of their rotation into their bullpen. This year, he's back in the rotation, but not that good. And then then the Blue Jays aren't that good, and then they're trading him away.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that tells you all you need to know for me. Like, yeah, maybe the Astros have their own version of pixie dust that they can sprinkle on.
And they do. No, they prove they do.
Oh, we've seen it. Yeah. We've seen it.
That's why I'm so intrigued.
I need to see it play out before I can actually feel good about this move, given what they gave up.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm so crazy about those prospects. It's just the amount of them and what the return is.
Yeah.
It's like, you mean all of that for a dude that might just give up bombs at Minute Maid Park? I'm not feeling it.
Well, you know, you mentioned, the advanced metrics and such. Yeah, he can throw 97, but you don't want it going out when he misses at 108. because in those last nine starts that I've talked about since June 10th, nine starts, he's given up 10 home runs. So, yeah, it's going to be very intriguing to watch, and I'm going to be here for it.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the Astros against the Rays tonight, Minute Maid Park. Yusei Kikuchi making his Astros debut. Y'all been watching the Olympics, man. And Simone Biles, I got to say, she's got a feel for the crowd, a feel for a flair for the dramatic. Is that the right?
Perfect.
She definitely has a sense for it. Got an aura about her. Obviously, the most, at this point now, the most accomplished gymnast of all time. Check her out last night talking about her goat necklace and how much she loves agitating the haters with it.
Don't only have the gold medal around your neck, but there's also a goat. Yeah. Tell me about it.
It's a little ode. I mean, a lot of people love it. They always call me the goat, so I thought it would be really special if I got one made. And the haters hate it, so I love that even more. And it's just a special part of me that I have here, as well as in the village, I have like a stuffed goat just to get a reminder, like, you can go out there, you can do it. You've done it before, so let's go.
You know what I love about her? She's absolutely the goat. And I'm going to get into something that might tweak a few feathers when we get to confessions.
She's undeniable.
She is undeniable. But what I really like about her, she owns that she's a little polarizing, a lot polarizing in some circles. You know, people like, remember, I got blocked because that former gymnast was talking about and unafraid to wear a goat necklace. Like if LeBron did that.
Oh, man.
If LeBron did that.
Listen, well, I mean, LeBron has chosen one or something like that tattooed on his body.
If he wore a goat necklace, he would be destroyed.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He would be destroyed. I like that she owns it. Like, she knows her place, is unafraid to not necessarily brag, but embrace it, you know?
Does it make sense if I say that I don't really like her and I like her at the same time?
No, that's what she is, and she's embracing it. She gets it.
Like, she's got a vibe and an aura about her that makes me feel like, you know, not that she wants to hang out with me, okay? I think I would pass. Like, hey, do you want to have lunch with Simone Biles and Jonathan Owens? I'd be like, does Simone have to come? I kick it with J.O. I remember J.O. when he was here, but I don't really have to be around Simone Biles. Yeah. But to your point, she don't seem like she really give a
don't care
a bleep.
No.
Right?
And I like that.
Like, she is absolutely here for the smoke, it seems. She is absolutely here to, like, just brush off the haters. And even not just brush them off, but to agitate them. To say, hey, guess what? You may not like me. Mm-hmm. You may think one way about me, but guess what? I'm the GOAT.
I'm the GOAT.
I'm undeniable. Watch me work. Watch me do my thing.
You and I were talking about this with Santiago before the show, because I'm with you. I get that she's polarizing, which is weird because she's the best there's ever been. But like, if you're just watching gymnastics and you don't know about difficulty and you don't know how high she goes, which is incredible.
She's unreal, man.
Suni Lee is more fun to watch. Like, to just watch.
Well, you know how I feel.
Well, I know you, especially, you know.
I mean, y'all know how I feel about that.
We all know how you feel about Suni Lee.
Come on now.
I was thinking about you last night. Yeah. Especially when she was, anyway.
Absolutely.
But just as a gymnast, she's a gold medal winner, for God's sake. She was the defending all-around gold medal winner. She's awesome. But, like, if you're just, like, watching gymnastics from a novice's perspective, like, and didn't know all the details, I think Suni Lee's more fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, she does. Yeah. She does more, I guess, fun
the
things.
The dancing, the lines, the facial expressions, you know.
But there is
whereas Simone Biles is like, holy crap.
Yeah, so it depends on what do you value, though. Because there's something about that holy crap element. Yeah. Like, she's just unlike anything else. Similar to the way Usain Bolt was, and track is starting today. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
But like, similar to the way Usain Bolt was, like, you could appreciate all the other track athletes out there, but this was the one.
You were like, holy crap.
You got to lock in. Michael Phelps, the same way, back when he was doing his thing. Like, it's like, man, I like some of these other stories in swimming. I like some of these other stories in track and field. I might even like watching some of them more. But this is the one that I got to lock in. It's undeniable. Yeah. Maybe even for me, there's that element of, you know what, I don't really like her. But I like that I don't like her.
But this, you also like her.
Yeah, it adds to the intrigue of like, and I'm also not like hating. Yeah. You know what I mean? I just, it ain't.
Be careful, man.
Not my cup of tea.
Yeah, they're about to start calling you a hater.
Okay.
I don't give a damn.
Tune in at 12:20. Feathers ruffled.
Yeah. Call me a hater and I will respond with, and, you know, like, you ain't going to whoop me though. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Come on now. Coming up next on In the Loop, the things that I was wrong about after the Texans' first preseason game. Don't miss that. It's next, Sports Radio 610.